103.2 Dublin City FM. This is Mental Wealth with myself, Brian Green. Thanks for tuning in. We are available online. If you want to send an email, it's mentalwealth@briangreen.com. We look forward to hearing from you. On today's programme, I have a guest in studio and I say hello to Ross Flanagan. Hello, Ross.
Hey, Brian. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Not too bad now. Not too bad.
You've done loads of these radio interviews before, though, haven't you?
I'm a dab hand, unfortunately.
We have you in here today because you're a bit of an expert in mental health and advocacy for LGBT issues. LGBT issues.
That's the one, yeah.
I should have notes so that I could help me, you know, say the acronyms. And can I just start on those letters? Because there's LGBT. LGBTQIAB. No, people keep adding on to it.
They do. Yeah, and there's a whole alphabet.
Is it a bit like you wake up another fortnight and there's another letter added on?
There can be. Yeah, I suppose I kind of learn a new word around LGBT plus issues every day. So when we're talking about LGBT, it's covering lesbian, gay, bisexual, and trans. And those four words look at sexual orientation, gender identity, and your biological sex. So it can be a bit of a mouthful to try and get your mouth around each and every letter that we have. The Q and I refer to queer or questioning, and I refers to intersex. But by and large, most people will just refer to the community as LGBT.
You are an advocate in this space. What does an advocate do?
I ask myself that every morning. But basically what I do is I work in an LGBT organisation and it's trying to just make sure that Ireland is the best place that it can be to be yourself, really. And it's everything from education to workplace to policy and legislation. And then obviously mental health would be a big passion of mine. So making sure that mental health and the experience of our LGBT people is as good as it possibly can be.
You said something there that kind of struck me, that therefore it should be something for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just for people who happen to be gay, bisexual, lesbian. Mm-hmm. It's an area of human rights that is gaining its rights at this epoch, at this time.
Mm-hmm.
So it should be something that everybody is interested in. Is that the case? Is there kind of an interest from the straight heterosexual community?
Absolutely. I mean, nothing happens in silos, and the kind of progress that we've made in the LGBT sector wouldn't have been made had we not had allies. So had we not had heterosexual or straight cisgender people who are on side with us and kind of recognize that human rights don't just apply to certain people within classes and pockets, that they are universal, that our LGBT brothers and sisters and family members and friends and colleagues and neighbours, that everyone deserves to be treated equally and fair. And I think, you know, being in Ireland, we're traditionally a nation that has very big families. And if we look at global averages of 1 in 10 people identifying as LGBT, that's kind of one person at least one person in each and every family in Ireland that is LGBT. So we do need to make sure that when we're moving forward with LGBT rights, that we're doing so alongside our straight peers and alongside our allies, because that's the only way that you can bring things forward.
If that's the case, I would imagine that the numbers of people supporting are turning out in greater numbers to all sorts of campaigns and events and Pride every year. Will that be the case?
Yeah, I think so. I definitely think Pride has gone from being, the very first Pride event in Dublin was a march. It was a protest, a peaceful protest, but it was for the LGBT community to kind of stake claim in and promote their presence within Ireland. And walking the streets of Dublin was a way that they did that. And it's grown from being initially a march into being a day that we celebrate diversity and a day that we embrace everyone and anyone, despite their sexual orientation, despite their gender identity. And it's a day when people can just be themselves. I think we also saw kind of during the referendum when we had over 1.2 million people that came out and voted yes. So they were in favour of same-sex marriage and creating a kind of more equal and fairer Ireland. So we definitely are seeing a huge kind of a big increase in kind of engagement for the straight community,
we've come a long way, but let's maybe go back a bit and say where we've come from. The law was very different not so long ago, and it was very different for a long period of time, for about a century.
Yeah. Yeah, so it was kind of in the 70s that being gay was declassified as a mental health issue. So from the 70s, that was kind of the first big milestone in terms of recognising LGBT rights and in terms of addressing the fact that it was previously seen as an illness. And with every illness comes a process for you to cure somebody. And that's not how it works. You know, you can't cure things that are true to a person and the way that they're born and the way that they feel about things. You can't cure that, especially when it comes to your sexual orientation and your gender identity. So from that point, when it was declassified as a mental health issue, we've made kind of steady progress over the last couple of years, but it wasn't really until the early 90s in Ireland when it was decriminalised. So previously, homosexuality was a criminal act. It was enforced more so on gay men rather than gay women. But it meant that the community felt like they had to hide and felt like they had to be in the shadows, because nobody wants a criminal record for just being who you are. So kind of from that point in the 90s when it was decriminalised, we moved forward. Eventually civil partnership was made available to same-sex couples, then civil marriage. We also had the Gender Recognition Bill, which allowed the trans community to self-identify their gender. So I think we definitely have made big steps. Those big steps have taken a really, really long time. It's only really since the 90s that we've had kind of protections and laws that are really being enforced in terms of equality. And that can be a lot for the community to kind of get their head around. I mean, if you're going in the 90s, people who grew up in the 50s and 60s went through that time of being like othered and told to stay in the shadows of society, and now they're kind of being included. And it must be a really disorienting feeling for them when they're so used to hiding so much of themselves, and now it's like, you know, we're all okay, we can all be who we want to be and embrace our diversity and celebrate that. So I definitely think that with big strides also comes kind of those who were kind of against change, you know. And we kind of saw that during the referendum, when there was people who weren't in favour of same-sex marriage, that weren't in favour of extending the same rights to people. And that obviously has a huge impact when you hear people that are so adamantly against you. That can't not impact on you in one way or another.
So when the law was changed in 1993, it was kind of late June, and I happened to be outside the country. I was in the United Kingdom, and I was travelling from Holyhead to Edinburgh, and I was listening to BBC Radio 1's Newsbeat, and I was listening to news from Ireland on British radio, which is kind of unique in and of itself. And the broadcaster was Leo Enright, an Irish broadcaster working in BBC at the time. And he was reporting what was going on in Ireland. Nora Owen was bringing in a bill decriminalising homosexuality.
And indeed, I've been constantly reminded of that fact since I became Minister for Justice and announced that this was one of the priorities for legislation for me. I think there comes a time when somebody has to act as a legislator.
The opposition to this measure has been astonishingly muted, but right-wing parliamentarian Brendan McGahan remains firmly opposed.
This is against the natural order of things. Now, my opposition is not based on any religious conviction. I do believe that it is unnatural for two men to get into bed and do what they do to each other.
So where do Ireland's bishops stand on all this? They don't approve of the new laws, but the Roman Catholic Bishop Joseph Duffy walks a careful line.
We do not seek to enshrine church teaching as such into state law. We do not expect to have that acts which are sinful in themselves should by that very fact be made criminal offences. So we're asking the politicians, the legislators, to listen to what we have to say, to take it into account when they make their decision.
So that was 1993. And so many things have changed. Fast forward to 2015, and this month, 2015, in May, the country is asked to vote on a question. A question I thought they should never have to have voted on, because I thought you didn't need to ask every single person in Ireland, was it okay for two people to get married?
Yeah.
But that wasn't possible. And what was possible was a referendum. The government of the time was a coalition and a referendum was available. And therefore, I think the campaign switched to, okay, well, let's do ask everybody. I'm kind of thinking of the video Sinead's hand and not wanting to go to every door in Ireland and ask, is it okay if I marry Sinead?
Mm-hmm.
And the campaign is fiercely fought. Mm-hmm. There's posters from both sides on every lamppost in Ireland. And were you feeling, you were very involved in the campaign, were you feeling in that it was going to go the right way?
Yeah, so I suppose during the time that I was volunteering and on the marriage referendum, I wasn't 100% sure. I didn't really know if it was going to pass and if it was going to not pass. And I think that's kind of what kept us going, was if we were to rest on our laurels and to feel like we've done amazing work, which was done, and I really can't kind of convey that enough, is how incredible it was to be a part of such a campaign, to be surrounded by people who believed in a cause so strongly that they were devoting every waking hour that they had of every day to make sure that Ireland became a better place to be.
Again, I wasn't in the country. Are you getting a little kind of
a train of thought here?
I was in Belgium and I was on a coach tour and I had one headphone in my ear and my twin brother had the other headphone and we were listening to the results coming in, the boxes being opened, early tally indications, so it would have been around 9:30 Irish time, and hearing numbers like 90% of boxes voting yes in Ballyfermot in Dublin. Mm-hmm. And I, being political, would have known that that meant that strong working class areas of Dublin and other urban areas were going very strongly for yes, mm-hmm. which would carry it. Has there been analysis in the last 2 years as to, you know, where that support came from, and or is it just strong enough to kind of, you know, say, you know, Ireland supported it?
Yeah, I'm not sure about specifics in terms of a breakdown of support and where all that was coming from. That would be politics isn't exactly my most favourite subject in the world. So I'm not 100% sure about that, but I do think that overall, when you're told that over 1.2 million people said yes and 400,000 people said no, I mean, to compare the two, it's not great to know that people voted no. But I think that the overwhelming majority speaks louder than the minority in that case. And it really is very heartening to know that so many people cared enough to go out and vote. I mean, it's people who might not have ever voted before in their lives and people that might have been kind of on the fence in terms of which way they should vote. But I mean, they turned out in their droves. I mean, it was thousands and thousands of people that came out on the day to really take a stand and say, we accept you and we think that this is fair and this is what needs to happen.
What is the situation with LGBT and mental health? Is it a defined correlation between the two, or is it just because of the stigma, because of the legal situations in the past that people have kind of been under pressure and therefore it triggered mental health issues?
Yeah, I think it's more so to do with the impact of being LGBT that kind of has a greater force in terms of your mental health rather than actually being LGBT. So it's not that if you come out of the closet you automatically pick up a mental health issue, but actually the way that you feel like you're treated and the way that you are treated by others is what has the greatest impact on your mental health. You know, there's a lot of research that's going on in Ireland as well as internationally, and by and large, they will all say that the LGBT population has a greater prevalence of mental health issues. So it's definitely a cause for concern, and it's something that we do need to address and something that we do need to work on. I mean, if we think that 1 in 10 people identify as LGBT, but we also look at the overall population and 1 in 4 will experience a mental health issue, I mean, when we're looking at facts and figures and comparing. So research that was done in 2015 found that LGBT people had 4 times higher rates of depression, anxiety and stress than the general population. And I mean, to think that you're 4 times more likely to have severe to extremely severe depression simply by fact is because you're LGBT is definitely something that we need to look at. I also do recognise that mental health doesn't discriminate. So it doesn't matter who you are, what you have, a mental health issue is going to hit you if it hits you. But it's just unfortunate that for our LGBT people that they're far more likely to have a mental health issue.
Is there a double stigma happening in the case of mental health?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we're definitely not the most open of places at the minute when it comes to talking about our experiences and our mental health and our well-being. So I think that there's a bit of a glass ceiling in terms of mental health in general in Ireland, but I also think that there's another glass ceiling when it comes to being open about your sexual orientation and your gender identity. So when you're an LGBT person that's faced with a mental health issue, those ceilings tend to overlap and you kind of feel like you're trying to cope with your mental health issue and you're trying to get help, but then there might be certain roadblocks and barriers that come up because you're LGBT. Some of the trans community can have kind of bad experiences when they're seeking care. So healthcare, their GP might not really understand what's going on. Their psychiatrist might not understand what's going on. And when you have that, and then you're also looking to that person for help, it's not really great for you to be doing kind of an LGBT 101 piece and trying to educate the person who's there to help you when actually you're there to get help for the issue. So I do think that there very much is a double ceiling that's faced by the LGBT population when they're trying to address a mental health issue.
Staying on the mental health area, mm-hmm. there is now an increase in the availability of information, and there's lots of talk about transgender in the media. We mm-hmm. saw the front cover of National Geographic in January 2017 with a transgender child on the front cover. It's there. It's becoming a greater thing. Is that something that has suddenly happened, that there are more people reporting as transgender because it's more, you know, open and comfortable to do so, or is there something changing there?
I think there's two pieces there. So I think there is a greater acceptance and understanding of your gender identity being on a spectrum. So it's no longer that idea that you're either male or female and that's just how it is. I think we're coming around to the acceptance that sometimes we can feel a little bit more masculine when we're male, and sometimes we can feel a little bit more feminine when we're male. And the same for women, that they can feel more masculine at times and they can feel more feminine at times. So I think when we start to understand gender identity and gender expression in that way, it opens up the door for a conversation around people who maybe don't feel like their gender identity and their sex are aligned, and people feel more comfortable to talk about issues like being trans. They feel more comfortable talking around their gender identity. So I don't think that there's more trans people in the world. I think that there's just more conversations happening, and people kind of feel like, through things like the gender recognition bill, that they're able to speak about it and that they're allowed to speak about it. And it's not just speaking about it, but it's actually being able to deal with it, and so that they can go and begin the process that they want to begin to actually have a gender identity that matches their gender expression.
Is the world ready insofar as, is mental health services ready? Like, we live in a very binary world, and it mm-hmm. might be changing, and things are on a spectrum, and that can also be a spectrum of change from one strict position to something more fluid. Mm-hmm. Is mental health services ready and, you know, able to deal with the situation?
Yeah, I mean, I think our mental health services are definitely open to having conversations. I do think that practitioners are becoming more aware of issues, and that's across the board. And I think that they are open to learning more about the LGBT community and possibly specific needs that the LGBT community might have when they're seeking care. It's not like we're trying to reinvent the wheel when it comes to providing care for the LGBT community. It's just about creating greater awareness and greater education and more comfort with healthcare practitioners and providers, so that they don't kind of feel overwhelmed if somebody presents to them with an issue and that they are getting distracted by the LGBT rather than the issue. I do think that there's really small things that can trip a lot of LGBT people up in terms of feeling quite overwhelmed, and that's anything from a sign on a bathroom door to a unit that's gendered, or to a folder that they have all of their information in that might be a colour, like say blue for men and pink for girls. Like, small little pieces like that can be big issues. There can also be a sense that you have to come out to your healthcare provider as well. So you have to go through the whole coming out process with your GP, and then you might have to go through the coming out process with your counsellor. And that can be really overwhelming, because they're obviously there because they feel that there's an issue going on for them with their mental health. And then to overlap that with that experience of having to come out again can be quite a lot for people.
Is language a lot to do with it in terms of being able to have the discussions that we should have around mental health? Would it be the case that the gay community took back the words that were slurs and things that were thrown at them, like queer and gay, and took those words back and owned them through Pride and, you know, other outpourings of, you know, protest and affection? Is owning language and being able to break it down and not to be, you know, lost for words when it comes to having the discussion and conversation?
So there is a movement at the moment to kind of reclaim the power in the word queer, which would have been typically seen as a slur, but the community is trying to reclaim that and say that queer is what we are. We are not the norm. We don't fit into kind of traditional stereotypes, and in some ways we do, but in a lot of ways we don't. And what we want to do is make sure that when you say that word, that it's no longer felt as a harmful word. We want to take pride in it. And I know for me, being confronted by the word queer was a huge adjustment, because I would have grown up in that space where queer was a really derogatory term. And it's quite a lot to hear that when you hear it as a slag term, and then to hear it as a word of pride and a word that really represents your ability to kind of triumph and your ability to address the issues that have gone on in the past, and for you to be able to say, I don't care that you use this word in a bad sense, I'm using it in a good sense. So I do think when it comes to language that we do need to become more comfortable. I think that if we're just even aware of what LGBT stands for, that we're a little more comfortable in having a conversation with somebody who might use lesbian, gay, bisexual or trans as an identity.
How important are role models?
I think role models are hugely important. For a lot of LGBT people, it's a really good sign to know that somebody else has come out, that somebody else has gone through what you've gone through, and that they have not only just gone through it, but now they're actually in a place of giving back and feeling great pride in who they are. And they're not afraid to hide parts that they probably would have hidden before in their lives. The idea that somebody has stepped out of the closet, stepped out of the shadows, and is now in a place where they are proud to be who they are and is proud to stand strong in what they are. I think that when a role model is there and it's somebody that you can look at and know that they've gone through stuff that you are probably going through yourself, I think that it can mean the absolute world to people. And to know that you can go through it and you can come out the other side, and the closet is just a closet, and once you're out, there's a whole world out there. And the cloaking that you would have done before to kind of hide and keep yourself safe, you don't need to wear that cloak anymore, that you can take that off and you can walk out from the shadows and you can be in the light. And I think that that's hugely important for people. And I don't think that it's just role models that are LGBT. I think that it's also role models that are allies and people that are straight and people that are friends and families of LGBT people that are willing to stand up and say, I'm straight, but I'm on side. I believe that you should feel that you're able to be who you are, and I believe in you, and I care about you, and I love you, and I support you. And I think that those role models as well are really, really important for the LGBT community, that we aren't just saying that I'm different and I'll stand with you, but it's actually, I want you to stand with me in general, that everyone deserves the chance to stand up and be proud of who they are, irrespective of their sexual orientation or their gender identity.
To finish off, crystal ball time. Mm-hmm. What's on the horizon for Ross in advocacy in this area? What's coming down the tracks?
What is coming down the tracks?
Any international things coming to Dublin in September or anything?
Yeah, so...
That was a leading question, by the way.
That was very leading.
Thank you. Bit obvious, go.
For reminding me. I definitely think that in terms of LGBT issues, that we're going to see more integration and overlap. I think that we're now in a place where we feel strong enough in what we've done and feel secure enough in what we've done to be able to branch out a lot more. And I think that part of that branching out is to look at the areas of overlap. So LGBT issues and mental health, and LGBT issues and ability and disability, and LGBT issues within other minority groups like cultural minorities, ethnic minorities. It's trying to appreciate that people have more than just one identity. And I think, you know, there's a lot of space for that to happen. And one thing that I think is really important in terms of mental health is actually integrating LGBT into being a part of each and every aspect of mental health. And that's everything from services right through to conferences. There's a conference that's coming up in September 2017. It's the International Association for Youth Mental Health that's going to be held in Dublin. And I think that that will be a really big chance for Ireland to say, not only are we really strong with mental health and we're standing alongside our international peers in best practice, but actually we're embracing diversity and we're creating a space where LGBT people can belong, and we're creating a space where we're willing to discuss and hash out and go through and improve LGBT mental health in Ireland and abroad.
And this conference is September. You're a very modest person. You haven't mentioned that you have a special role in the setting up of this conference. It comes every 2 years to an international capital, and it's coming to Dublin after, was it Montreal?
Yes, it was in Montreal.
And what's your job?
My role there is youth co-convener. So basically what I do is try and youth-proof the conference and make sure that it's inclusive of young people, that the content that's going on and everything to do with the conference is done in consultation with young people, so that they don't feel that this is a conference that's run by adults, that it's adults talking about young people, but it's actually making sure that we're talking to young people rather than talking about young people. And young people will be the future, and they will be the future practitioners, and they will be the future role models and allies and LGBT people in Ireland and abroad. So I think that it's really important that we actually do make sure that their voices are heard.
Finally, if anyone's been tuned in for the whole 26 minutes of this interview and are looking for signposts, places to get more information, is there groups out there, good groups in Ireland that are working in this space that you'd like to maybe give a shout out? So websites, just the name of the group or anything that you could shout out now?
Yeah, so in terms of LGBT supports, there's a ton of really good resources out there. Those national organisations like Belong To, Glen and Tenny, they do phenomenal work in the area. There's also listening services and supports for LGBT people. So there's the LGBT Helpline and the Gay Switchboard Ireland. And there's a ton of really good community-based organisations that work regionally and in outside of Dublin with the LGBT community. And you can find them, a quick Google, you can find them on most of the national organisations' websites or on the Gay Switchboard or LGBT Helpline websites.
Ross Flanagan, thank you very much for your time today, and we look forward to your conference in September and seeing you in cyberspace as well.
Cheers. Thank you, Ryan.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
103.2 Dublin City FM. Our chat with Ross Flanagan will be available online in the next 12 to 24 hours at audioboom.com and on SoundCloud from Dublin City FM. This has been Mental Wealth with myself, Brian Green. Email the programme mentalwealth@briangreen.com. We're back next Tuesday at 12:30. Thanks for listening. Take care. Stay safe. Bye-bye.